Hi, welcome to NZ Vegan Podcast, episode 148. I'm your host, Elizabeth Collins. This is coming to you from the COVID lockdown in Auckland, New Zealand. We got put into a one-month lockdown by our government a week ago, or starting on Monday or something. It's hard for me to tell because I'm not actually in lockdown. I'm actually going to work. So, because I work in the health field and we have to cancel all our appointments, and we have actually had to see some patients because there are some people who still need to be seen. Very rare. Mostly we're cancelling. But yeah, I've been going into work every single day, same time, same hours. On top of the stress of everything, I'm pretty exhausted. Just the stress is exhausting me. I'm just on my usual schedule. I'm not doing any extra hours. But I'm keeping up with my yoga. And luckily, the yoga studio that I go to, I love their classes so much. And I really, really, really miss it. But they are unable to have classes, obviously. But lucky for us, they're providing Instagram classes with all of their teachers. So at least I get to do my regular workout with the regular same people and the voices that you're used to, and, you know, just the same. I mean, they give really full-on workouts. That's what I really like about them. They're really full-on. And so I'm so grateful to them. So at least I've been doing that. I've been eating well, and I have been avoiding, but when the supermarkets were still, like, before the lockdown, I avoided buying heaps of junk food and alcohol and stuff like that, so that I could just stay healthy and not sort of, because on top of all the stress, everybody, I really urge you to be healthy. Keep doing your exercise. If you're in lockdown and you're tired, sleep. Oh my God, I wish I could sleep all day. Just sleep, eat well, rest. Don't, you know, fall into destructive habits for your body, your mind. Do your meditation or whatever it is that keeps you healthy, is my advice. And because it's so stressful. And anyway, I just hope everyone is well, and I am thinking of you all, and I really hope that wherever you are in the world, it's that you're okay, that your family's okay. And I'm really bummed. I mean, it's taken me long enough. I really hate this microphone. It's the worst sound in the world. I can't even stand it. It's such a horrible sound. And I should have bought a brand new, because I had this headset mic that I used to use for my podcast, and I reckon it sounded so much better. I mean, I can't stand the way my podcast sounds ever since I stopped using Pro Tools anyway. But even then, and then when the headset mic suddenly stopped working and I had to use this horrible desktop one. And so I was like, right, I'm going to do more podcast episodes, is what I thought, maybe over the lockdown, although I don't know why I thought that. I don't know. So I was like, let me just quickly go and buy a headset mic before the stores are shut completely. And they had sold out because people were panic buying headset, like, you know, USB headset mics. I'm like, God, you people will panic buy anything. But I can't blame them. I should have bought myself a new one ages ago. I've definitely had the money. I've been employed for a year now. I started working in March last year, so I have no excuse. I mean, I started working full time in March last year. So I'm going to buy one, I promise. I don't think I'll be able, I mean, I haven't really investigated getting Pro Tools again. I'm just using GarageBand. But at the very least, I should have a better mic that's not so tinny and ugh. Anyway, I'm sorry. So I don't even know how many people still listen to this podcast. I don't do it regularly, and I don't know. I sort of feel redundant now. I think, you know, what's happened is what we wanted when we started, when I started doing this podcast, 2009, how many years ago is that? 11 years ago, January 2009, right? I'm so bad at math. Today is March 2020, my 11 years ago. My wish, you know, my absolute wish was that, you know, veganism would be talked about, that the abolitionist approach would be known, recognized, that people would know who Gary Francione was and who his work was, rather than just a few sort of onto it people. The weird thing that, you know, that happened is that it sort of gets swallowed up because the animal welfare industries are still really, really strong. And there's also heaps of people who want to cash in and capitalize on anything. And whenever anything like becomes trendy or something, there are so many people who just are in it for themselves. And then the message gets twisted and it gets lost. And the problem is, like, instead of reading Gary Francione's books or really investigating his work, like really, if it doesn't, like, if you read or if you listen, like, my favorite thing for people to do is listen to the debate with Eric Marcos and Gary Francione. And why is that? Well, it's purely because that's what had such an impact on me. So I just can only go by, you know, what had an impact on me. Reading his books had an impact on me. Listening to him on Vegan Freaks definitely did, but I don't even know if those episodes are available anymore. But Vegan Freaks were the first people that I know of on the back in 2007, and the online digital, you know, this world, the what's it called, social media world, who had him on as a guest. So props to Vegan Freaks. I mean, they were the first abolitionist podcasters. And they, you know, and Bob Torres wrote a book, which is a really great, good book. And the economics, I can't remember the title. I'm pretty exhausted. I think, like I said, I'm trying really hard to stay healthy, and I am exercising, and that's Shebby just sharpening her claws on my desk. Hello, baby. I don't know if you could hear that. And I'm, you know, doing all that. But the stress on top of the fact that I'm working and then on top of the stress, and then for the first few days when everything was starting to happen here in New Zealand, I know there's people listening who have had to deal, you know, but we're sort of like, you know, we're lucky, we're late, we're small, we don't have as much death. We haven't had any deaths and this. But I just, the lack of sleep and then worrying about pay, because, like, we weren't told by our job that we were going to get paid, and we actually weren't told that, and we weren't told if we were going to keep working, and I just had this huge, massive fear that I was going to have no income, and I was just freaking out, and I couldn't sleep, so I'm kind of exhausted. Sorry if I sound really drained and tired. I'm healthy. I'm very grateful to be healthy. I don't want to sound like I'm whining, but I just apologize if I'm sort of sleepy sounding. It's Saturday after or evening here. I'm going to do this podcast and then have dinner. Tomorrow I have to do all my prep because I'm doing my normal routine. And my normal routine is a good routine, but it is a get up at 5:30 in the morning and go and do yoga early in the morning and then work and then come home and then get ready for the next day. So it's very full on, and I try to be in bed real early because I've kind of become enamored with having enough sleep. I never experienced that. Like, having enough sleep is new to me and it's life changing. And everyone's like, oh my God, you look good. And I was like, yeah, I know, I used to look like hell, but you're too polite to say that. What they really mean to say is, gosh, you don't look like hell anymore. And they're like, you look good. And I'm like, yeah, I actually get enough sleep. I recommend it. So I'm very, very, very disciplined about my routine, getting into bed early, because getting enough sleep is life-changing. I have not gotten enough sleep for the last 3 decades of my life. Now, that is through life choices that I have made. It's not because I've been deprived or not a privileged, but bottom line, I never have had enough sleep. I mean, I've gone days and days without sleep. And then, at the moment, even though I am now sleeping again at night and I'm not worried about money because I'm still working. Like I said, I'm going in every day. And because I work for the health board, I work for like a hospital, doing audiology, obviously. But once we run out of our admin work that we have to keep up on because we have to cancel patients' appointments and keep up and blah, 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 blah. And then we're going to like disinfect all the rooms and going to only keep two rooms open. So for emergency appointments, because we do, believe it or not, there is such a thing as emergency audiology appointments. There are some people who really do actually emergency need audiology. There's some medical conditions and cancer treatment, and those patients are not going to stop their treatment because it's life and death, and then they also need their hearing test because that informs the treatment. So anyway, we've got lots to do, and all next week I'm definitely going to work. So in terms of my routine, everything's the same. It's just that driving through the streets is really weird. It's very, very weird. It reminds me of movies like, you know, Vanilla Sky. I don't know if anybody's seen Vanilla Sky. There's a Spanish version called Abre los Ojos. I think it's called Abre los Ojos, but the American version. And he has a dream, and then he walks outside, and then all the streets are empty. And there's lots of movies like that. And the streets aren't empty here because we do have people who have to go to work. There are people who are working in, lots of jobs where they have to. I mean, supermarket workers are like my heroes at the moment. Anyone selling, you know, in the vegetable store and stuff, they're just out there like front line. And then of course there's health workers and stuff. So there is cars around, but the one thing in my commute home is it's like way better than it normally is. Sorry, I'm babbling. I just thought maybe with people being in lockdown, I don't know, maybe you'd want to hear a podcast. But what was I talking about? This podcast is about veganism. It's about animal rights. And to me, animal rights, the only animal rights that I find legitimate is the abolitionist approach to animal rights by Gary Francione. I think there's lots of copycats who are watering it down, twisting around for their own agenda. There's lots of people who don't get the accurate, they don't understand it. And there's all of these people twisting it and taking the rhetoric and little memes or sound bites of it, which sound good, but then you delve a bit deeper and they're total welfareists. So that's, before I became vegan and became an animal rights advocate, I mean, I'm not a professional animal rights advocate, and I certainly don't do as much of it at the moment as I did when I started. But that doesn't mean it doesn't matter. Like, I'm still going to do it for the rest of my life. And like, I think there's just ups and downs, and I'm getting my life on track. I'll talk a little bit about the stall as well, just to keep people informed. But it doesn't matter. It's like anything else. Like, even if you have even if you go down and you don't do it, doesn't mean you have to abandon it and say like, oh, well, I've given it up, I'm not doing it. Sometimes life just gets in the way, you know. It's, I'm a single woman, and, it's a struggle, and because I find it difficult to make all my close friends, I left in New York City, I have close friends like that, I do, and I love them, and I need them, and they are there for me, and I love them, but I don't see them as much as I used to see my friends when I used to be real social and stuff. So it's, I'm very independent, and I'm very self-sufficient and all that. I mean, I did rely a lot on my mother when I was studying. Of course, she was there for me and send me petrol vouchers and stuff. But generally speaking, I've been on my own since my 17th birthday, and I'm very self-sufficient. But sometimes when you're trying to turn your life around, or when you go back to square one and you start all over again, and then you lose, you know, you sort of give up everything and you start all over again, and you do that several times like I've done through my own choice and my own decisions and whatever, you know, you're still kind of struggling, and then especially as you get older, you want to stay healthy and you want to stay fit. And you kind of, I think that the older you get, you kind of blend a bit more and people don't pay attention, or like, what should I say, like people discount you a little bit more. I heard this, on This American Life, which is another podcast. It was the first podcast I ever listened to. It's a very famous podcast. It's been going since 1996, I believe. So that's a long time, 24 years. Wow. And it was about the virus, and they were interviewing a woman, a woman over 70. So of course we know the over 70s are at the most at risk from this virus. And she just said that she just felt like, because it was just killing older people and it was just more affecting older people, that's why it took so long for people to really care or to really take action. She said if it had been killing younger people and middle-aged people, like middle, you know, like people like in their 40s or 30s or, you know, maybe even 50s, or like especially like young people, way more would have been done way sooner. And she thinks that, and I kind of, you know, I can see that. I really can. I mean, we're a very ageist society. And anyway, it was sad, you know, to hear her say that. She's feeling very vulnerable. She lives, this is a woman in America. She was on This American Life podcast and they just interviewed her. And she lives with her husband who's immunocompromised and is at very, very at risk. And, you know, I have to admit, like, I personally, for my own self, I am not scared of the virus in terms of my own health. I'm totally being responsible. Don't worry. I'm not being reckless. I have to go to work, but I'm just get in my car. I drive to work. I just stay at work and then I come home. And that's all I'm going to do in the lockdown. And then when I absolutely have to, I'll go out and get food, and I'm very obedient. Like, you put gloves on and you stand 2 meters away, and I'm very, very respectful of the supermarket. I haven't been to the supermarket because luckily I don't have to. I don't go to the supermarket very often. The only thing is tomorrow, where I get all my fruit and veggies, I'm really hoping that they're open, but they might not be, in which case, I'll have to get my fruit and veggies from the supermarket, which I don't like, but I understand if they don't open the market. I really do. It's just an inconvenience, though. I mean, I'm so privileged. I mean, I'm totally fine. But I'm vegan and I've started eating really, really healthy the last year for the first time in my life. I've actually started eating like consciously healthy. I never did that before, really. I'm cutting down heaps on oil. I'm really getting into this oil-free stuff. Again, it was vanity. I'm getting older, and so I want to get rid of this stomach fat, which I don't think I ever will, because I think it's here to stay, and just stuff like that. I was like, oh, I really want to, like, you know, it was more vanity. I was like, oh, I'm getting fat, when I went to uni, and I know that's very superficial, and there's nothing wrong, and I don't want to stigmatize it, but it's really hard to explain what it's like to be a woman in this world, unless you are a woman in this world. Women understand. So anyway, that's why I started eating healthy, was because I was like, oh, I want to look better. Of course I wanted to feel better, but it was primarily because I wanted to look better. Because I, you know, I'm full of all of that, you know, I'm indoctrinated with that, with the thing, you know, when you're old, you're ugly. If you're not in shape, you know, like if you don't have like this slim, whatever, body, you're ugly. And I'm trying to fight it. Like, I recommend the book, The Beauty Myth. It's a great book. Read The Beauty Myth. It did help me to see more beauty in the world. I need to reread it and reread it. And I don't have a television, and I try to avoid movies that are really, really overtly sexist and stereotype, and this is what beauty is, and this is what beauty isn't. And I do see a lot more beauty in the world, but it's still really hard for me to see beauty in myself. And I know that beauty is just so superficial, but it's just hard to explain unless you're, well, I don't know. But anyway, I'm feeling better too, but between you and me, I don't have a great desire to live that long. And I never really cared. Like, I've said a million times, I didn't go vegan for my health. Like, anyway, if you go vegan for your health, it's just a vegan diet, and it's not about the animals anyway, because leather is not a health, you know, right? So, but what I'm trying to say in all this babble is that for the last year, I have been working out I'm really feeling good. So I don't really think I'll ever think that I look good ever again, which is sad. I'm going to try real hard to fight that. I'm really trying hard to fight that. I really will. But I definitely feel good. And I know that's the main thing, and I'm trying. But I feel good. Oh my gosh, eating this healthy diet, this whole foods. I'm eating pretty much a whole foods vegan diet. It's very rare now that I have. I mean, I used to eat chips like you wouldn't believe. Like you wouldn't believe. And then, of course, in the last few years, there's all of a sudden, the sad thing is that the big explosion in veganism, in my country anyway, has manifested in vegan junk food. I mean, and that seems to be what everybody celebrates, because there's always been vegan whole foods, so it's not new. It's like people who've been vegan for decades are like, you know, I've been eating lentils and grains, and it's like, duh. But the thing is that because the new stuff is like, oh, you can have vegan pizza, and you can have vegan ice cream, and you can have vegan burgers, and I mean, of course, in the you can always have made your own, and you could always have made your own burgers. Yes, Jebby. I will come and I think she wants me to let her out. But now it's like you can go to a restaurant, you can have it, you can buy vegan, you know, chocolate like ice cream, like commercial, like trumpets and stuff like that. So this, unfortunately, because vegan food has always been around and they can't suddenly come out and say, oh my God, we've got lentils and look, we've got beans. So they're like, hey, we've got vegan pizza and stuff. So unfortunately, there's still been this vegan junk food. And so, of course, having being a person who really loved junk food my whole life and really didn't really care about my health in a really big way. I mean, I really didn't. And just for whatever reason, you know, I did all kinds of things to my very damaging things to my body. I mean, my body's been through a lot. So I just embraced it. I leapt on it. I was like, vegan burgers, vegan fries. I mean, the biggest thing for me, because I love fries, I mean, I adore fries. And because all of the, there was no place for me to have French fries when I first came back to New Zealand. Nowhere, because you can't buy French fries that have been fried in the same oil as chicken and shrimp and egg spring rolls and stuff. Because then your French fries are filled with animal products and you're eating animal products. It's not vegan. So I just couldn't ever have French fries, couldn't ever have spring rolls, nothing like that. So when all of the vegan junk food started to come, because a lot of young people were going vegan in New Zealand, and all of a sudden there were these vegan restaurants and they had demand and they've opened up and they're great. I mean, I support them, and don't get me wrong, but it was like burgers and fries and pies and donuts and all this stuff. And man, I just went crazy on the fries. When Lord of the Fries came, I just was so fries deprived. So there was, my biggest thrill was being able to have French fries again. But now, since I've been really consciously eating this very healthy diet, oh my gosh, I mean, I just don't eat stuff like that anymore, hardly at all. But it's not deprivation. I'm not sitting around jonesing for it. I love eating this healthy food. And I feel so healthy, and and I'm young. I mean, I'm not over 70. So in terms of the COVID, I'm young. Now, I'm not saying that young people can't get very, very sick. And of course, if you're immunocompromised and you have other health conditions, you're at risk. I'm lucky enough that even despite all the abuse that I've done to myself, I'm actually pretty healthy. I've come out the other side, you know, and I'm okay. And so in terms of getting the COVID myself, I'm not that scared. Silly. I just think I'm probably going to be one of those people who just doesn't get very sick. But of course, I'm not saying that this means that I'm being very blasé and I'm running around in the community. But I'm not scared for myself. I'm scared for all of the people who are vulnerable. And I'm, of course, scared in terms of being scared for myself and being scared for Jebby, for example. I was scared of losing my job. I was scared of a total economic collapse. I'm scared of, you know, crazy. I mean, we had people in the supermarkets in New Zealand, this probably happened overseas, panic buying toilet paper and clearing out the shelves. Even in New Zealand, the gun shop had a line down the block. I mean, it's insane. Sometimes I think it's like, you know, those Hollywood movies, they've been prepping us for this kind of stuff for years and years. But anyway, God, I'm sorry, I'm babbling, but maybe you're just at home in lockdown and hopefully you've had your healthy meal and you've done your exercise and now you're just like chilling, drinking something healthy and like listening to me babble on. But anyway, so I'm not scared for me, but I am scared of the craziness and the panicking and the long term. And I mean, Jebby's food is AmiCat. She eats AmiCat vegan food. It comes from Italy. And I got real scared because I do have a big, like, I have enough, but I suddenly got real scared and thought, my God, what, you know, what am I going to do? You can't just switch a cat's food like that. She loves it. She eats it. She's thriving on it. And it's very dangerous to just switch cat's food and run out of food real quick. So I was panicking because Italy, of course, is having this unbelievable amount of infection and deaths. I mean, unbelievable. I mean, Italy, Spain, France, the US, and Italy, Spain. I mean, what the heck is going on? It just doesn't make sense to me. But anyway, so I thought, gosh, you know, I can see this being very long term. And so I thought, well, what am I going to do? They're going to run out, you know, the production's not going to happen and I'm not going to be able to even get it shipped. So I quickly, you could call it panic buying, I guess, but I bought two big bags and I'm really hoping they get here. I'm so anxious. When those two bags get here, I'll feel a little better because I know I'm taking care of my baby who's completely and utterly dependent on me. I mean, I can eat anything, but I can't just switch her. It's very dangerous to just switch a cat, and I could start weaning her onto something else, but she just is so healthy on this food. I don't want to have to start giving her junk. I do have some of the food that she used to eat, which is the Veggie Cat supplement. So it's from, it used to be from Harbingers of a New Age, but that was the original creator of Veggie Cat, and his name was James, can't remember his last name, and he eventually had to retire. I mean, he's got to be in his 80s by now, and so he had to sell the company, and he sold the company to, I think they're called, oh, I can't remember, Compassion Circle or something. Anyway, it's this homemade food. It's actually way healthier in my opinion, than AmiCat, but Jebby just started to go on hunger strike, and only cats can be very, they can become anorexic. I used to work in a cattery cleaning cages. I know that people think that that's a conflict. I was doing it when I was at uni. I was cleaning cages in a cattery vet. And I have had to force feed cats through syringes because they will go anorexic. Never get into a battle of will with your cat. Some cats will starve themselves. And the problem with cats is they get fatty liver. So if they don't eat for an extended period, and I'm talking like even 24 hours, I believe, for fatty liver to manifest, this is why stray cats are so at risk. Something about their makeup. They're so delicate. They're obligate carnivores, right? We all know that. But I don't know if that's what makes them delicate. I don't know if the other obligate carnivores are delicate like this, but their digestion and all of their systems are so delicate. And if they go without food, like if your cat suddenly goes off their food, that's why the vets are like, if your cat stops eating, bring him in, because they get this thing called fatty liver. So I've got some food from, it was James Peden, that was the guy who used to make it, and I can't remember, but it's a supplement, and then you add the supplement, you add the yeast, and then you make the rest, and you've got all these different recipes, and there's a rice one, there's a tofu one, there's a there's a wheat gluten one, and you make them, and it's really wonderful food. It was the food that Buddha got really healthy on, and it was the food that I gave Jebby when she was a kitten, after she finally was weaned off the horrible formula that she had to have. But anyway, I was thinking about trying to get her onto that food, so I'm going to see what happens with this delivery. I got the message from, I bought the AmiCat from, they're called Circle of Compassion, I think. They're from Germany. They sent me an email saying, yep, your order's being dispatched. So as far as I know, the order's being dispatched, and the order was dispatched through DHL. And I'm like, okay, please, please be up and running. And then I got an email from DHL, and that was all in German. So I put it into Google Translate, which then translated it into Spanish, because all my stuff is still in Spanish because I'm trying really hard not to lose my Spanish. I'm so sad about my Spanish just getting worse and worse, but I live in New Zealand. What are you going to do? But anyway, I read it. I just read it, and it seemed fine. It was just like, you know, this is your order. If you have questions, you know, like, it wasn't like a alert, by the way, we're not shipping anything because we're shut down. It was sort of like just a standard, like, you know, this is your tracking. And so I'm really hoping to get it. But the problem with it is last time, because New Zealand customs is being really strict. So last time I bought her a bag, it was held in customs and they wrote to me and like asked me to justify it and what was it and stuff. And I think I wrote them, I couldn't believe it. I was like, how dare you? You know, you trying to force me to, like, I was thinking, don't you dare crack down on vegan food for animals. I would just freak out. So, but then I wrote them, so they wrote me, they sent me this form saying, your delivery has been flagged as needing this and that, and you have to answer these and that questions. And I just was like, whatever. So I rang them and I couldn't figure it out. And then I wrote, and then I think what I had to do was I had to write an email, and I had to fill out this template as to what it was and you know, which it was clearly, it says on it, it's cat food. And then I think I wrote the first line of my email, because sometimes I can be a little bit sharp-tempered, shall we say. It's the Irish in me. I said, in answer to your ridiculous request, here is the information you require. And then they wrote me back some poor person, you know, who's nothing to do with it, wasn't their decision, wrote back and said, oh, we're really sorry for the inconvenience. And then I got my food. So we'll see what happens with this whole COVID thing, because it's coming from Italy, blah, blah, blah. But either way, even if it has to be stuck in customs for 3 months, I'm still okay. I just want to make sure that it gets here. So these are the kind of things that scare me. Personally, for all I know, I could have had the virus and I'm recovered, because the problem is that it's so variable that some people have no symptoms at all. And so I really hope that I haven't been exposed and spreading it around. But again, like I said, really what I'm doing is I'm just going to my job, and then we're all together and we sort of have our bubble, and we just really hope that we're not part of the problem. I mean, I want to stay home. I want to stay home more than anything in the world, but I can't. That's the way it is. So yeah, blah, 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 blah. So anyway, I just thought I'd do a podcast. I've been invited, when I first started doing this, I used to have guests on all the time back when we got started, and the abolitionists were like abolitionist approach, abolitionist. And then a lot of people I sort of became really jaded, and I've never really been involved in any kind of activism or any kind of cause, you know? And I can just see how annoying people are, you know? I can see how annoying it is. I mean, when I talk to my stall partner, Jeff, him and his wife are from America, and they moved to New Zealand, and they now live here. But they were both active in the Socialist Party. So I think they started in the Communist Party even, maybe, in America, and then the Socialist Party. And the same stuff. Just people wanting to, just corruption, you know, like people just wanting just their own agenda, and somebody always wanting to be a leader. And you always get these creeps who come in who are total psychopaths who just, it's all about them, and they just see a niche, and they see a place where there's vulnerable, passionate people who are so caught up in their emotional attachment, because it's such an emotional issue. I mean, animal rights is such an emotional issue, because it's a Holocaust of epic proportions, and these people they're just predators. I look at them as predators. I look at a lot of the people who get involved in these movements as predators, especially the ones who want positions of power and you know, and there has been actual instances. I mean, I know in this organization, DXE, there's heaps of rumors of sexual abuse. And I'm sorry, I believe it. I mean, I know the way the world works. I know about the rampant sexual abuse and taking advantage of vulnerable women and probably vulnerable young men as well. But, you know, generally it was women, and it was predatory men taking advantage of predatory women. And that was a scandal that came out. So there are predators. So when I first got involved, So I've very much retreated, and I'm lucky to have found people who I trust, who are close to me, who I can do this with. There's only like three or four. And it makes me sad that there is. And then there's other people who are, you know, they know about Gary Francione, they know about the abolitionist approach, but they don't know it. They don't know the work. They have gotten the distorted, piecemeal, sort of very superficial, meme-driven, tweet, short characters and stuff. And then they think they know it, and then they go out, and then they get all upset when we don't support them or when we criticize them on what they consider to be splitting hairs. And, or they, you know, a lot of it's fear as well. I think a lot of, I've talked about this before, I think a lot of the reason why there's so much speciesism in the animal movement is because we're so speciesist, number one, obviously. And also, because so many people are still very intimately and personally involved with people who are non-vegan. I mean, because animal use is so pervasive. I just have to see if Jebby wants me to let her out or if she's actually going to go out the cat door. Sometimes when I'm home, she just refuses to go out the cat door. She's just like, you are here, you can open the, I'm not going to go out this stupid tunnel. Because I had to get a, there's very stressful situations happening with her, with this neighbor's cat, and it was, oh, it was so bad. And yeah, I know there's people out there who are going to say, don't let her out, just, I wish I could have an indoor cat. I live in one room. She's very, very, I don't know what to tell you. Come and live with me for a month, and then you can lecture me about the fact that I have a cat door. But I very much support people who keep their cats inside, and I really do, okay? Enough said, okay? But this cat was coming in, and long story short, it was actually affecting her health. My cat gets very, 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 very stressed out. And I had to get a micro... Oh, did you know, by the way, anyone listening who's able to afford it? It cost me a few hundred dollars, but I'll do anything for Jebby. I mean, and I had it, you know, I have an overdraft. That's what it's there for. And I had to get her a microchip cat door. This is a beautiful invention. It's a microchip cat door. I didn't know about it. If I'd known about it, I would have got it years ago, because the neighbor's cat used to come in all the time. You can get a cat door that you program your cat's microchip, and then that's the only cat who can come in and out, and no other cat can come in. It's like the ones where you have with the collar, but Jebby won't wear a collar. I tried a long time ago to put a collar on her with a bell, because I was worried about her, you know, going after birds, and she could, it was too dangerous. Like, this cat will not tolerate. I mean, she's just, it's hard to explain. She's very, very, anyone who's got cats understands. They're very varied in personality, and she's one of those ones. I will never get a collar or a harness on this cat. And it just didn't work, so I had to abandon that. And then I was just like, there's nothing I can do. I don't know what to do. And then I got a microchip cat door, but unfortunately, because of the place I live in, the microchip cat door, it goes through this thick wall, and it's sort of, she can't really see out very well, so... Even when she had a normal cat door, like, she would just, when I'm home, she's like, I'm not going to squeeze myself through this stupid, annoying cat door. If you're home, you can damn well open the door and let me out and let me in. And I totally get up and do it, because I agree with her. She's not a second-class citizen. I'll be right back. I think I need to let her out. I'm back. Yeah, she was actually already out. She did finally let herself out, but anyway. So again, I've interrupted my train of thought, and I can't remember what I was talking about. But basically, yeah, this, I was talking about what's happened to the movement, and you know, feel a bit. So it's funny, because partly we're getting what we wanted, which is that veganism's becoming more mainstream and blah, blah, blah. But because the animal welfare movement has been around and very, very strong, and the careerists, you know, have made money and money and money. We're still fighting against that. But I do, there's definitely a lot more people who actually are abolitionists, as in real abolitionists. And there's more and more and more, because the idea is so powerful. The problem, the thing is that we're fighting against this tide. Oh, I know, I was talking about how people, how there's so much speciesism because people are intimately involved. It's just so pervasive, and they are, you know, there's a lot of apologists out there, and there's a lot of people who, you know, they've never in their lives taken a stand like me, you know. They've never been a civil rights activist or a feminist or a socialist or any type of thing, and then they go vegan because they... Because the thing about veganism is, the thing about, let me think, how can I, so like, it's a bit, you know, when you talk about what non-veganism is, it is, you know, the actions and the effect and the impact is as if you were a slave owner who lynched, you know, and or paid people to lynch and beat slaves. I mean, it's non-veganism is the direct 100% participation cause, you know, absolute, like, just part of the system of torture, literal and slavery and torture, and unbelievable direct fundamental rights violations and injustice of millions, billions of sentient beings. It is, when you're a non-vegan, you are not just a German living in, this is going to be a bad metaphor, but the vegans will understand. I wish I could, like, you have to be like, oh my God. I was non-vegan, okay? So when I was not a vegan, it's not like I was, you know how they talk about Nazi Germany? I'm sorry to bring this up. They're like, when you bring Hitler into the occasion, you lose the argument. I'm not actually making an argument. I'm trying to express an idea, and I'm sorry, but this is a parallel that I just feel is appropriate at this moment. Okay, there's probably other parallels, like I said, the slavery one. I'm trying to use a human rights example. I'm going to use it. So when you talk about Nazi Germany, you talked about the people who worked in the concentration camps, right? And were who were directly, you know, maybe driving the trains or no, this isn't a good example, actually. What I'm trying to say is that, you know, when you talk about racism and you talk about, like, myself, like, I never thought I was a racist. I never knew that I was a racist. I knew I was white, obviously, and I knew that racism existed, but I did not recognize my own racism because I was not an overt racist as far as I knew. When I look back at my childhood, we told racist jokes all the time and laughed at them about Maori people. I was Pākehā, I'm a colonizer. We used to make jokes. At that time, I was a child. This is what I was indoctrinated with. When I got older, I thought, oh gosh, I'm never going to laugh at those jokes again. Those jokes are wrong. And then I was like, well, I'm not a racist anymore. I was no longer an overt racist, and I thought I wasn't a racist anymore. But I was still, very racist. The indoctrination that I'd received my whole entire life growing up as a colonizer, like a descendant of colonizers in the colonized country. Of course I was, but I wasn't overt. But when you talk about non-veganism, it's not even like being one of those people who thinks they're not a racist, and you're really actually literally literally cause, like, you are going to the supermarket and buying the corpses of the slaughtered animals. I mean, it is direct participation. So in terms of, so I was going to say like Nazi Germany, whatever, but I'm getting lost in that metaphor because it's like, oh no, you could say the slaughterhouse workers are the ones who are actually running the, like, they're the ones who, like, you compare to the people who are running the ovens or whatever. And then the rest of the population, blah, blah, blah. But the rest of the population wasn't buying the bodies of the Jew, you know, the Jews and the other groups who were killed in the concentration camps. So I'm getting a bit lost. So let's talk about an animal one, like an animal, a typical, like one of the millions and trillions of animal uses that we use, and talk about how, what am I trying to say? Ugh. The thing about, so like, let's talk about, oh, there's a big cause, everyone's anti-rodeo. I'm totally against single issue campaigns. Oh my God, they're this so wrong. But when you talk about non-veganism, people get confused and they don't, you have to really wake them up to their active participation in it, because the welfarist movement's very good at compartmentalizing things for people and say, you're a good person because you're not a slaughterhouse worker. You're not the one who's hitting the newborn calves over the head with a hammer. So you are, they do compartmentalize. And what we abolitionists are trying really hard to do is saying it's all the same thing. And I'm sure, I mean, this is what, you know, this is what advocates for civil rights and anti-racism are trying to do, is to, like, get everybody to wake up to the fact that it is a systemic thing and we're all part of it and we all play our part. And you can't be quantifying things. You just have to say, if I'm part of it, I should no longer be a part of it. Whatever my part may be, it is wrong to be part of it. But the difference to me is, like, if you are, when you talk about non-veganism, it's like you are the slave owner, or at least you're buying the bodies of the slaves, or you're in the town square watching the lynching. I mean, it's so direct. You're so 100% in it. And the beautiful thing about veganism, the special thing, which I'm getting back to with my point with these people who go vegan but have still got family members, is like, the thing about veganism that's different to everything else is, like, when I was finally educated in a proper way about racism and white supremacy and white fragility, which happened before I even read the book White Fragility or learned about Robin DiAngelo's work, it was people of color in my life who, you know, had to put up with my stupid crap and listen to my garbage before they finally tried, you know, they were trying to get through to me, and they did get through to me, and I owe them a debt of gratitude for that, for working on me, even though I didn't really deserve it. But they were doing it, it's to save themselves. They were, like, desperate, you know, they were advocating for themselves, and I was willing to listen and try, even though I would still throw my defenses up and I'd hurt them again and keep hurting them and keep hurting them. They stuck it out, and I finally got the message. I wasn't being overt. You know, I wasn't going out and like throwing racial slurs at people's faces, or I didn't agree with discrimination based on race. I didn't agree with oppression of people of other, you know, of non-white people, of people of color. I didn't agree with it. I didn't realize I was part of it in the ways that I was, but I wasn't overt. The thing about non-veganism is you are so part of, I mean, you are directly in it, man. I mean, you are culpable 100% because you are buying those, you are paying for that. You are the cause of it. It's, you know, everyone, like, goes on about how it's not about consumerism and blah, blah, blah. It's not morally about, I mean, morally it is about consumerism, but if you just, you got, you know, sometimes people get a bit lost. It's like, let's really look at the practical situation, which is what Gary Francione dedicated his life to studying. Very practical person. Very practical, okay? His work. People say it's impractical. It is the most practical work out there. It's the only one that's practical. It's the only one that gets it, in my opinion. When you go to the supermarket and you buy a lamb chop, You are directly the reason why there are lambs being slaughtered. I'm sorry, but it's just true. When we get rid of the consumer base, when we get rid of the consumption, of the consumer purchasing and consumption of animal products, there will still be a monumental amount of speciesism to combat, because of there's all kinds of other ways that we destroy animals and violate their rights. But when you go vegan and you reject your direct participation, it's like you refuse to go and pay for the lynching in the town square anymore. You don't go to it, you don't stand there, you don't put the rope. You don't put the rope around the tree, even if you're not the one who puts the rope around the neck. You don't put the rope around the tree, and you don't go, and you really, really remove yourself from it. And it's actually a pretty major deal, because I can remove myself as best I can. I can work every day to try to remove myself from being a part of the oppressive system of white oppression. And, you know, but I never lynched anyone or never went to a town square. And like I said, when I was a kid, we used to tell these jokes, and I laughed at those jokes, and I used to tell those jokes. I used to tell jokes about, you know, there was blonde jokes, very sexist. I was blonde and I hated blonde jokes. Oh, I hated them. Because I was blonde, and, oh, let me tell you, being blonde sucks. Don't say blondes have more fun. We have to put up with so much crap. But anyway, it's interesting, isn't it? But I used to, I'd still tell them and laugh at them because, you know, jokes are funny. But I did hate blonde jokes. But anyway, I'm rambling. But so when you take a person who's never really been involved in civil rights or any kind of activism or nothing like that, but they do go vegan, you know, bless their heart, you know, and they say, hey, I'm not going to buy these products anymore, and I'm not going to go to the zoo, and I'm actually going to remove my direct participation that funds and pays for and fuels and is the cause of, you know, my involvement in that. I can't, you know, there's still all these other people causing it, and that's why it still continues. That's why we have to do vegan education, but I can remove myself from it. That's a really powerful thing. And actually, it's like a very real thing. When you refuse to buy those products, you are no longer paying for it. You're no longer causing it. You are no longer part of it. You are no longer, you have removed yourself from that cycle. So it's very powerful, but they still have all their family members and their friends of their whole lifetime, maybe their husband, maybe, you know, their adult children or their teenage children, or, you know, their colleagues that they've known their whole lives, and none of those people have removed themselves from it, and they're the only ones in their circle. And the resistance, as we know, is very emotional, because most people think they're animal lovers, and they think that they abhor cruelty to animals, and they don't think that they, and they don't want to hear it. And, you know, the smartest, most intelligent, well-educated people on the world become complete and utter I don't know the word. Just lose all of their intelligence when it comes to challenging them on animal exploitation. I've seen it happen. I have met very smart people who say things like, I mean, they say the most amazing things, and you're just looking at them going, it's that strong, huh? You will not give up your cheeseburger, and this is your rationale, and yet you have a PhD. It's insane. So as we know, so I think that a lot of, and people need their social networks, and they need their support systems and stuff, and that, and then they become apologists, or they become scared, and they say, you have to go softly, softly. You can't, you know, because they're terrified of alienating themselves from their family, because because it can happen. People will, you know, alienate you if they're that way inclined. I've been lucky that my family hasn't alienated me, and I'm very outspoken, as you can imagine, especially with my family. Like, I have gotten to the point where I am eating. Oh, it's been really hard, and I don't enjoy, and I'm not good at it, and I actually think I'm probably doing more harm than good, to be honest. But I have actually started socializing again, at events where non-vegan food is consumed, but not with my family. They do not get that. No. They know it. I've spoken to them about it. They don't get a break. I am not cutting them any slack. I'm sorry. I'm holding them to a higher standard. So, no. I do not go to Christmas dinner unless it's vegan. And if I want a vegan Christmas dinner, I have to do all the work and I have to really make it happen. Not all the work. My mum definitely would participate, but I have to make it happen. And then I got real tired and I just was like, I can't be bothered doing all this, you know. So I don't go to, you know, I refuse to, with my family, they do not get a ticket out. But other people, I have been doing it, and ineffectively, I am no good at it, and I'm not a good advocate in person. I mean, I'm not like Peggy, Jafet, Warren, who I think is amazing, and Frances McCormack, who are abolitionist approach advocates, and Vanda Karas. I mean, they're amazing. I'm good at my street stall because, like, and I've talked about this before, it's a platform where I'm in control and it's a stranger and blah, blah, blah. I'm no good in these social situations. I think I'm really lucky, in fact, that I went vegan when I did. Because what I'm talking about is, like, when I talk about these people who already are in their networks, let's say you're someone who's married, you have a husband, you have in-laws, you have brother-in-law and sister-in-law, you have nieces, nephews, you have all of your brothers and their children, and you have your parents, and you have all your friends, and you've lived there all your life, and then you actually go vegan, right? Because you wake up enough and you actually have the courage of your convictions. Well, good on you. But wow, it must be really challenging, and I can see why they become apologists and everything and say softly, softly and stuff, because it is overwhelming to them. I'm not saying that I agree with this, because I think that there's power in numbers, and that if we all, like, if vegans would stop being apologists or saying, oh, well, vegetarian, you know, they're vegetarians. I mean, I'll never understand that. I'm so, you know, I'm almost tired of, but anyway, I'll finish this thought. So for them, I can't understand, you know, I can imagine that that's a challenging situation, because when I went vegan in New York, first of all my friends knew, and I was very, very outspoken about it and all that, but we were all single. Nobody had kids. We weren't married. They were my girlfriends. They were my best friends. They loved me. They would have been fine with it, and they wouldn't have rejected me. And they would have accepted, and I would have just, it would have been fine. I would have been very outspoken as to whether or not I could have maintained a close relationship with them after, if I went vegan and then they refused to, I don't know. But what happened is I left New York because I was already on my way out the door. When I went vegan, it just so happened that I was already coming back to New Zealand. I had been away from New Zealand. I left New Zealand when I was 19. I keep thinking it was when I was 20, but it actually wasn't. It was when I was 19. I went to America, and then I turned 20 like a month later. So that's probably why I keep thinking. And I spent, you know, until the age of 34. And I left Auckland when I was on my 17th birthday. And I never really, so when I went vegan, I was very much a lone person. I left all my friends, my best friends, my whole life, like my closest, bestest friends. Because when I was young in New Zealand, I had my bestest friends, but I was always kind of gone because I was never going to stay put, because I was never, like, I was always going to be gone. And then I did leave, and I was gone for, like, you know, what are we talking, 19 to 24, so 15 years, you know, my whole adult life. And then when I came back, and I was 35, when I came back, because I keep thinking I was 34, but I was actually 35. I just turned 35 when I came back. I didn't know anybody here because I had lost touch with everyone. Because I'd been away for so long and I never hung around. And then the only people I knew in New Zealand were a couple of old friends who I didn't even have contact with. I have gotten in touch with a couple of them, and they know that I'm vegan, and I've said a couple of things, and I've never heard from them again. And when I say I've said a couple of things, I've been like, well, I'm not going to use that product because it's me, or I'm a vegan, and I don't know. they just like, they never contacted me again, and that's fine. I mean, we were never that, like, we'd lost touch. So I do have some childhood friends who I really wish I could stay in contact with, but I came here, I had no boyfriend, I was single, I had no kids. So I was, you know, I had nothing to lose in a way, because I didn't, you know, my family, I was just my mum, my brother, and my dad. That was it. And, I knew I wasn't going to lose them, you know? I mean, there's no way. I mean, we're, despite all the crazy stuff we've been through, we're pretty close now. And, you know, they're not going to cut me off because of this. So, I'm in a different situation. And so, I don't have the experience of these people who are in this life with all their, you know, thing, and then they go vegan in that situation. And, you know, it must be really challenging for them to speak out. And they will have a fear, and they will have a fear about the relationships of their people to their children. They want to raise their children vegan, but they have to be scared that they don't go over to grandma's house and grandma's giving them like ham sandwiches saying, oh, there's nothing wrong with it. You know, so I can't relate to that. But I think a lot, you know, of speciesism that still exists amongst people who are vegan is because they are being very, very strong apologists because of their non-vegan family members and their non-vegan husbands, their non-vegan boyfriends, people they love. And they're terrified of losing those relationships, and I can see that. I don't necessarily think they should be scared. It's easy for me to say, you know, like I said, I've got nothing to lose. So anyway, I think that's one thing. But I do believe, I really think they should give everyone more credit. And I think that people take too quickly the knee-jerk reaction and they don't look at their own behavior, because I've been that person who's had the knee-jerk reaction, because when the truth comes, the truth hurts and you instantly react again. Well, if you're a typical person, you react and you say, ah, and you reject and you reject, but then you go away. And if you have any kind of brain or any kind of decency, you think about it. And I do believe that the apologist approach based on fear of losing relationships is so damaging. But I don't want to come across like I don't empathize or that, and because I'm not in that situation, then I'm just like, I don't know what I'm talking about. And people might be listening and saying, well, you have no idea what it's like to be, you know, a mother and a wife and an extended family with in-laws and everything, and then to be the one who goes vegan and then blah blah blah. And I don't, and the honest truth is I don't. Like I said, I was single, I left America, came back to New Zealand, I knew nobody, so I don't have that experience. But I'm sorry to say, I do believe that when you are an apologist, you are harming, and you would be doing more, and you need to give people more credit. So I just urge all of us to please try to just give, I don't know, the apologist is very damaging, and it's very seductive, because like I said in my last podcast, this is one of the things I wanted to talk about in this podcast, was because my last podcast, I was trying to explain what I meant by, I was trying to sort of like clear up a potential misunderstanding, but because I know, like, I'm grateful that I wasn't in that situation, because I'm actually not that brave, and I'm, you know, really concerned with what other people think about me. I know that, I can admit that, it's so true, even though I say I'm not, I am. And I know myself, because when I'm in those situations, like, I don't know if I can't remember what I talked about in my last podcast. Maybe I'm going to repeat this, but this is really poignant for me, and I don't know if other people can relate, but when you're having a difficult conversation with someone, I think I did talk about this in my last podcast. I definitely tried to talk about my Spanish podcast. That was also trying to clear up the same potential misunderstanding. But if it's such a relief when this conversation changes from morality to recipes, it's just everyone gets an easy way out. And we can all breathe again. And then we can all be like, oh, happy, happy. Because instead of talking about fundamental rights violations and basically saying, you know, you are the Nazi, right? You are torture, you know, you're paying for this, you're the one putting the rope around the tree and then standing in the square and then like taking photos of the lynching and then like using it, consuming it or whatever. You can be like, oh, you want to know how to make a cookie without using egg? Oh, it's this. And of course it's valuable. I'm not saying it's not valuable to have the information. People need their practical information. But like I said, if you, I'm only using my own self as an example, and I know I am not a clone of the entire human race. I am me and I have my own unique thing, and that's the best I can do. But when I went vegan, I knew nothing about vegan baking. I thought I would have to give up cookies, and I was okay with that, man, because the alternative was to fund this unbelievable, unjust Holocaust of epic proportions. It's just mind-blowing. And you know, people, the indifference of people, it still shocks me. I'll never stop being shocked by the people. Like, so some of my colleagues now, they're, I think that they are resentful maybe of things, I think, and so they'll make jokes and things, and it's really upsetting. It is so upsetting. It's the indifference and it's the shock of the indifference. And then I'm like trying to think, well, what did I do wrong? Why are they being, you know, it's like, I'm like, I did something wrong. They should care more. They're laughing at me. They're laughing about veganism. They're making fun of animal use. What have I done wrong? And, but it's still really, really shocking. I mean, it's so shocking because it's so horrific. It's just so unbelievable what is happening. So unbelievable. It's like Rwanda, only all day, every day, in every single country, in every single world, and everybody's grandmother's doing it and feeding it to their kids, and everybody's doing it. You know what I'm talking about. And then you hear people come to work and then they joke about it. And you just think, you know, how is this possible? And where's the edge I want to get off? And like, where's the exit? Like, where's this? I don't want to be on this earth. Like, I don't want to be here anymore. Like, I just can't deal. But it's not about me. I'm not the one. So like, you know, but you do have to put your foot down sometimes and say, I don't want to be the recipient of that email, or this is not funny to me. And you can be a killjoy, but just be a killjoy, man. They'll get over it. You'll get over it. People aren't, if someone really holds a grudge for that long, because morality is on our side. It is. It's on our side. It's on the side of feminists. It's on the side of people who are against child abuse. It's on the side of people who are against racism. It's on the side of people who are against animal use. So take comfort in that. Take comfort in that when you have these difficult times. And please don't be an apologist. And can I just make one last plea? I don't know if I've achieved anything with this podcast, but I do feel better. I really don't remember why. Like, I hope, I don't know. I really need to get a better microphone. I'm sorry about the crappy sound quality. And I do hope to have more guests on. It's hard for me to trust people. especially animal people. Can you just please stop saying, you know, I have, you know, like this whole vegetarian thing. I just am so sick of it. Like, stop it. Like, stop telling me, oh, I've got, you know, some of my friends are vegan, or they're vegetarian. And I'm like, so, like, I don't care about the, you know, it's like saying some of my friends are vegan and then some of them eat eggs and others eat steak, but not eggs. And I don't, like, you have non-vegan friends as well, but vegetarians, it's no different. So stop elevating them. Stop it. Sorry, I'm yelling. Stop it. This has to stop. I am sick of it. There is no difference. None between meat and anything else. Okay? None. I used to think there was. It was Gary Francione's work that made that, you know, he's the first one I ever heard say that. There's no difference between meat and dairy. There's no difference. He says the really one of the things he said, he's like, it's like saying I'm only going to eat big cows and I'm not going to eat small cows. That's exactly what it's like. So stop it. I am so over it. I am going to shut down the next person who does that. I don't care if they think I'm mean and nasty. I'm just going to tell this vegan, like, could you, like, what do you mean, or they're vegan or they're vegetarian? What's the difference between, why are you talking about the vegetarians as if they're somehow different from any other non-vegan? They're not. They're different in their own mind, and then you're reinforcing that. I wrote something on my Facebook page, which took me a while to come up with, but it comes, like, to me, it's if you have someone, like, this person doesn't exist because there has been this, it is so indoctrinated in the world that there's a difference between, you know, flesh and eggs and dairy. Also, vegetarianism is a very powerful movement. It has been for a very long time. And there's a big religious movement, Hinduism, right? Or pure vegetarianism. So it has a lot of power behind it. And also just even in places like America and England. So there's a lot of power. There's a lot of propaganda and there's a lot of self-congratulations. It's just like there is, you know, I mean, there's a lot of that amongst vegans as well, I'm sure. But it's like, to me, it's like someone who says, I'm never going to eat dairy or eggs again because I, like, learned about the horror of those industries and I'm never going to do it again. But then they still eat steak and chicken wings. That's exactly it. It makes no sense. And neither does vegetarianism. It's the same thing. I'm sorry, it's the same thing. And if you want to argue that a lot of the vegetarians don't know about the dairy and egg industry, I would suggest to you that you are wrong nowadays, because I did my street stall. I started my street stall in August or September of 2009, and I met so many vegetarians, and there's only been like one or two out of the hundreds and hundreds probably at this point of vegetarians that I've spoken to at the stall who genuinely didn't know about the dairy and egg. And you know what those people did? One of them got very, very angry at me. He was a young man from, I think, Germany or something. And he lost his cool and was so furious that I suggested that all the baby cows, you know, all the calves were killed. He just, it shocked him. He refused to believe it. He was so angry with me. And he said, you are lying and that is not true. And I said, you know, I'm sorry you're upset, but just go research it. And I know there are people who, like, I remember I did this, I was invited to do this talk once and for some people, I think it was in Greece or something. And I said, you know, sometimes I tell people to go look it up and they're like, you shouldn't send them on the web, they'll encounter welfareism. You should only send them to, you know, Abolition Spirit's website. And I'm like, well, you know, I live in reality and, like, people are going to Google everything. I've already spent an hour talking to this person about abolitionist theory. I would hope that some of that would rub off when they go to these welfare sites. But the bottom line is, you know, people are going to go and find, and they're going to be they're going to come across all this welfare stuff. So rather than thinking that you giving them a website and saying only go to this website, and then thinking that that's the only website that they're going to go to, I mean, get real, you know, just prepare them for the welfare websites. So I do tell people, go, you know, go check it out. And I told this guy, I gave him my email and I said, you write to me with any evidence to the contrary that you find. And he didn't write back. And hopefully he went vegan. And then the other person, there was two people. There's three in the whole 10 years that I did my stall, because I haven't really done it for the last 3 years, so I can't really count them. I mean, I've hardly done it at all. Like, I've only done a handful of times in the last 3 years because I'll talk about that in a second and then I'll let you go. I'm sorry. Probably already hung up and, like, such, probably sounds like crap. But, and then one other person went vegan, like, on the spot. because she genuinely didn't know. She said, you have got to be kidding me. I was like, it's true. And then I explained it to her. And of course, she was an intelligent person. She was a logical person. And she got it. I was like, where do you think, you know, what do you think happens to the dairies? Don't you have to have a baby to get to lactate? You know, you need to have a baby. What happens to the babies? And I don't blame her for not thinking about it. I didn't think about it. We are deliberately told not to think. I mean, nobody wants us to think about it. So she went vegan. And then she came back a few months later and she was vegan. So she got it. She's like, I'm done. And also Jeff, the person I do the store with, he was the same. As soon as he found out about the dairy and egg industry, he gave up. And he was a cheese connoisseur. And then there was one other woman who I talked to about it. And she started crying. And she got very, very upset. She was a young mother and she didn't know. But apart from those, every single vegetarian I've ever talked to, I say to them, why are you vegetarian? Oh, because I don't want to hurt animals, blah, 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 blah. And unless they're like, oh, I only do it for health and I don't, you know, that's a different angle. That's not a person who's doing it for animal rights. So it'll be a peripheral thing, the whole animal thing. It's very peripheral. But when you talk to a vegetarian who's like, no, I'm doing it because I don't want to, you know, I'm taking the moral high ground and I'm not going to eat meat because I'm not going to be part of that. And then I say, do you know about the dairy and egg industries? They all said yes. Yes, I know, but, oh, but yeah, but I love my cheese. And I just, I really don't know what, I mean, what, you know. So a couple of times I've said to them, well, do you think it's wrong to eat meat? And they're like, yeah, obviously. And I'm like, well, what if a person who ate meat was like, oh, yeah, but I like, you know, the same argument that you're giving me, you wouldn't accept it. So I don't accept your, you know, you're not. But I just, for a minute, I get real silent and I look at them and I'm like, I don't, you know, so you know about it. So don't tell me, you know, that we shouldn't be being very, very, very blunt with vegetarians, that there is no difference. And don't say, oh, my friends are vegan or vegetarian or and vegetarians, or I've got vegan and vegetarian friends. I don't care about the vegetarian friends because they're just the same as any other non-vegan. So just stop elevating them to this different or separating them or putting them in the same category as veganism. Why? Not because it's Elizabeth's personal, you know, pet peeve. It's because of the damage that it does to the animal movement and to the animals. Can you see how it might damage it? Can you see? Please, please, please say that you can see. Please grow a backbone and talk to your vegetarian friends and stop acting as if, you know, there's just this minor little thing. Like, oh, well, they're pretty much vegan. It's just that they're not. So, yeah, that's just like, oh, my God. And the last time it happened was quite recently. And I didn't, oh, I'm so mad at myself. I wish I'd just stopped the person and been like, I just want to stop you right there. I really am confused as to why you're saying that, oh, well, most of your friends are, you know, the context was like, it's, you know, I'm surrounded by these non, you know, everybody in my life is non-vegan, although I do have some vegan and non and vegetarian friends. And you know what? It seems to be that people think that vegetarians are more sympathetic to veganism in terms of like, they're like, you know, like they're that one step closer or whatever that seems to be. Well, in my experience, number one, they are the most defensive. Okay. When you start talking about, let's talk about the real picture. And number two, I don't have very many vegetarian acquaintances at all. And all of my non-vegan acquaintances have been perfectly willing and enjoyable to go to vegan restaurants with me and eat vegan food with me. Okay? So it's not like, because everyone's like, oh, well, if I take a vegetarian to a vegan restaurant, it's easier for them because they've already given up meat. And so then they can just have, look, I don't hardly know any people who are vegetarian, but all of the people I know who are non-vegan have quite happily gone to a vegan restaurant and had vegan food with me. And it hasn't been a shock to their system. They're just like, okay, this is vegan food. There's no meat, dairy, or eggs. Fine. Even though this is a person who eats meat, dairy, and eggs. And a lot of, it's just bollocks. And I'm over it. And I'm, it's so damaging. So over it. It's still going on to this day. So yeah, so I will continue to put out my, it's just so annoying. But I think my Facebook page, I'm just a little bit like, I'm really not that active. I really am not. I'm trying to get my life together. But the stall, okay, let's talk about the stall. I've been talking for an hour and 20 minutes, blabbing for an hour and 20 minutes, really bad quality microphone. I've been shouting and screaming and cursing, so forgive me, and getting sidetracked. But what I want to say is that we were all excited and we started doing the street stall again, and we got off to quite a negative start because these activists, you can just look back at a couple of episodes, DXC, I think is the name of the DXC is in New Zealand, yay, not, did this thing, and the difference in the community was palpable and we experienced it. But also we changed it. I sometimes wonder, because we changed our stall to be this really slick looking stall, which we never had before. We looked like we came out of a basement. Everything was filthy. There was like a million different pieces of paper, and it was just so hard to manage. It was so exhausting. So we've got this beautiful tablecloth, but then I wonder if people are treating us a bit differently, because now we look slick and we look corporate and we don't look street anymore. And maybe people are a little more mistrusting. I'm going to talk to Jeff about that and see how we can overcome that, because that's something I'm wondering about. But anyway, we have this great setup and I think it's going to be great. I do want to have more. It's a bit bare. The table is a bit bare because we decided to just use the International Vegan Education Association pamphlets, which are color and free and stuff. But I really wanted to get our NZ Vegan starter kit going as well, so because it's very New Zealand centric and I think we need that here, and for lots of reasons in terms of ingredients and prices of things and differences in things, but we haven't got that going. But then, so what happened is we got our stall out, and it was going to be the summer where we just like we're back doing the stall, and it was like I was going to try to do it every 2 weeks or at least once a month, because that's more than I've done it. I used to do it much more regularly, and I want to get back to doing it at least once a month. That's only 12 times a year. That's not very much. But it would be nice to do it twice a month in the summer, because we do it in the winter as well. If we lived in a place where there was never any wind and there was hardly any rain and it was warm all the time, believe me, we'd do it a lot more. And if there wasn't like this massive wind tunnel and yeah. But we don't. So, but we do it when you can. But the problem is that my colleague went, Jeff, he went, he had to go home to the United States, and there was a family. He needed to go home, and then he couldn't come back, and so the whole summer he's been gone, and then I was thinking, well, I need to just do it by myself. I have to do it by myself. And then I never did it. And then I finally bought a trolley, because what happened is the old trolley broke. My dad's one that he gave me, this old supermarket one that he gave me, it finally broke after many, many years of faithful service. And it was, I just was thinking, oh, I can't carry everything by myself, or I was too scared to like carry it over and then leave it and then go all the way back to the car and then do several trips, because I'm a paranoid person. I'm paranoid about theft and stuff. I mean, like, who's going to steal our table and who's going to steal my pamphlets? But I'm still paranoid about leaving something just sitting in the street for 10 minutes while I go back to the car. So that's just silly. I should probably get over it. But I finally bought a trolley. I was like, let me just do the right thing and get a trolley again, so I can do the stall by myself, because I've got the table and everything at the moment, because normally it was at Jeff's house, because I have nowhere to store it. It's just, it has to stay in my car because I don't have anywhere to put it except for in our sort of concrete underground under the house, and it's very filthy and we're trying to keep everything clean. So it's been living in my car, and I haven't done it because I hadn't got up the gumption to do it by myself. I kept waiting for Jeff to come back, and then I was like, oh, I need to just do it because he's got things that he has to do and he won't be back. So the whole summer went by, we haven't done the stall since the last one we did, which was before Christmas. So we missed out on the whole summer. It's not because of him. He had to be what he had to be. It was because of me. I didn't get my act together. And then I finally bought a trolley, which means that I can carry everything really all in one go, like all the pamphlets and the table and the stands and the cupcakes and everything I need, and it's actually quite an expensive proper trolley. It's like a proper like trolley that you would use like to transport equipment over, you know, the concrete and stuff. So it was a good buy. It's long term. It's totally brilliant. And then COVID happened when I finally got my act together and I was like, I'm gonna do the stall, and then boom, COVID started to happen, and then everything was just got really weird. And then now we're in lockdown. So that's it. I haven't done it, but we will be doing it. We love doing it. Jeff's going to get back to the country. luckily he's a New Zealand citizen, so he can come back. And then of course he'll have to self-isolate for 14 days, but no matter what, in New Zealand we're on lockdown for 14 days anyway. I mean, sorry, for a month at least anyway. So by the time we start doing the stall again, it'll be winter, but we just do it in the winter. It's, you know, we just do it. But I hope to get back to that. And like I said, you know, with my work and stuff, I'm not very good advocate, but you know, I just try. But I just need to get back to the street stall. I need to get back to doing regular podcasts, good quality sound, maybe having some guests on. I could get Will to come back. I could get Jeff to come back and talk on about the stall. There's other people I could have on who are genuine people. I just don't know if, because I'm sort of not part of the scene really anymore. I don't know if they would come on because maybe they think I'm like, I don't know. So I don't know who would actually want to come on my podcast anyway. But it would probably be more interesting. But I'm still going to do it because it does still keep me sane. So anyone who's listening, thank you for listening. But even if nobody listens, I always feel better. And I feel like I've sorted some things out. And hopefully maybe I'm getting a backbone and I can start being more effective, you know, at work and stuff. Or, I don't know, learning from my mistakes. And it's hard though. I just get so emotional. I get so upset. But anyway, so thanks for listening. And everybody, please, I don't know, stay safe. Be smart. Even if this is a giant conspiracy, like, let's just say, just stay home and just do it, because I think there really is a, you know, just stay home. If you're in a country that's in a really bad way and you don't, like, I'm so lucky in New Zealand, like, even if, let's say I run out of work at my job and they have to send me home, I'll still get paid. I mean, how lucky is that? I don't know how long. I mean, it's not like indefinitely, but this whole month I would have been paid. If I was in the private sector, I'd be getting paid 80%. And the bottom line is I'm still going to work anyway. And I'm relatively safe. I don't know. Like I said, I'm not personally that scared of the virus for my own personal self. Of course, I don't want to be a spreader and I don't want to get it and infect other people. But I don't have a deathly fear. I'm not over 70. I don't have asthma. So I'm very lucky. I'm a very lucky person in this time. I don't have a lot of personal fear. But I'm still being very compliant because, you know, I'm just going to. I'm not going to risk anyone. I'm just not. No, my mum is over 70, so she's in total lockdown. My brother has, gone to get her grocery shopping. Of course, if I went to get her grocery shopping, it would only be vegan food that I would buy her. I would not buy her eggs or her milk, and that's that. So she's probably grateful that my brother can do the shopping for her, because my mother is not vegan, and she wants to eat that stuff. I feel like a failure. But anyway, remember one thing. They are responsible for their own moral decisions. It's the truth. Yes, you can be a better advocate if you can. Yes, you can try to do things differently. Yes, you can. But the bottom line is the responsibility is on them. Just remember that. Try to remember that, okay? So I'll leave you with that. Just don't give up. Don't be an apologist for non-veganism. Don't compromise the moral message. If you are about to open your mouth and you know that you have two options, number one, you're going to compromise the moral message, or number two, you have to stay silent, stay silent. I swear, I beg you of that. I'd rather you didn't stay silent. I'd rather you spoke out and were unequivocal about the fundamental rights of all beings not to be property and not to be used. But if that is not doable for you in that moment, and the only other option you have is to compromise the moral message or to be speciesist, please don't say anything. That's what I try to do, okay? But I know sometimes we slip up. You get trapped, you get caught. It's social habit. Someone will say something like, I don't know. And you'll just be like, oh, that's okay. And then it slips out and then you're thinking, no, it's not okay, it's not okay, it's not okay. And then you have to try to recover from it. No, it's actually not okay. I mean, you know, so I understand that these little mishaps happen, but just remember you are the face. There's so few of us and there's so many vegans who are out there compromising the moral message and teaching people that veganism is not about being absolutist about animal rights, which is shocking to me. And we are so in the minority, so you really, really have to watch it. And if you do slip up and do a social thing, like someone will say something like, blah, 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 blah. Oh, sorry. Or someone will say like, oh, blah, 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 but I'm eating less meat. And then you're like, oh, that's good. You know, you just comes out like by accident. Try your best to recover, because sometimes you're just being a social person, you're just like, oh yeah, or you just say something, you know, like when you say to someone, hi, how are you, and you really aren't asking how they are. And if they came back and said, oh, I'm just so sad today, you'd be like, oh gosh, I didn't expect that. I expected them to say, fine, how are you? So sometimes things come out, but generally speaking, try to be really conscious. One thing I need to learn is how to shut my mouth. God, I wish I could shut my mouth and take a breath. Like somebody asked me today, because I've been complaining because I'm so exhausted and I've had no time off like at all in the last 30 years. I mean it, like I've had very little sleep and I can't remember the last time I've actually had, like just the way I've lived my life is very different from my peers. My peers being middle class white people. You know, I've just lived in a different way and I'm pretty burnt out, man. I have to be honest. I'm pretty burnt out. Like, from just no sleep, working two jobs, being stressed, having no stability, no vacations, no time off, sometimes going days without getting rest. I'm burnt. So part of me is like, damn, I wish I was in lockdown for a month. Oh, I could do with a break. So I'm a bit jealous. I know this is really sounds really twisted, but I'm a bit jealous of people in lockdown. And I have said that to a couple of people. And I think they've taken it the wrong way. And my neighbor today was like, are you going to work today? And I was looking at him like, it's Saturday, 11 o'clock. What are you talking about? But I didn't say that. Instead of just being quiet and then saying, what? I was like, oh, no, I don't work Saturdays. And then I was like, oh, it sounds like he's mad at me because I've complained about the fact that I can't stay home. And now he's just like trying to be snarky. And then he was like, oh, well, then at least... And I was like, no, I'm not working till Saturdays. Oh, I know some people are, and I guess I'm lucky. And he was like, yeah, so at least you can get some stuff done. And I was thinking, he's attacking me because I'm complaining about having to go to work. But what I really should have done in answer to that question was being like, what? It's Saturday. I just wish sometimes I was tougher. Like, people can really easily walk all over me. I care too much about what other people think, and I'm very easily bullied. I really am. And I'm so sick of being bullied. And as a woman, and as a blonde white woman, I get bullied in a certain way that only other blonde white women can understand. And I'm sick of letting people bully me. Not that I'm saying my neighbor is a lovely person, and I'm sure he wasn't, but it was just a very unusual thing. And the whole conversation was weird. And I was thinking, dude, you know, just give me a break. But instead of sort of like taking a breath and then being like, what? It's Saturday at 11 o'clock. Why are you asking me this? I was all like, oh, I need to like be apologetic for keeping it real and being honest about how I wish I could have a break and not have to go to work every day because I'm exhausted mostly from the, like I say, the added stress. Although I am not as, I'm not stressed about income because I do still have my income for now, which is very much of a huge relief. God, that was so stressful, wondering about that. And I'm sleeping better. But I think because it's such a stressful situation, you get real tired. I mean, of course, I'm not doing my usual job, which I love. I'm doing something really boring. And I'm sitting in a chair all day staring at a computer screen. I'm basically like working in a call center because we're just canceling appointments and having to reschedule. So I'm tired from that too. It's very tiring to sit in a chair all day and stare at a computer screen and click a mouse all day. Ask anyone who does that type of job. It's actually really bad for your body and it's actually exhausting in a weird way. It's draining. It sounds like it shouldn't be, but it is. Trust me, sitting around all day is so bad for your body. That's why I love my job, because I'm up and down and running around and getting on the floor with kids and jumping up and I'm down the hall and up the hall and back. And it's a very active physical job, which is one of the reasons why I'm so grateful for my job. But at the moment, I can't do my actual job because we're in lockdown. So anyway, here I am complaining again, and I know I'm lucky and I should stop complaining, but anyway, thanks for listening to me whine, and I do hope that you're all safe, and I really hope that you aren't having financial troubles, because it must be very, very scary for people who are not working and whose employers are getting antsy, or maybe they live in a country where the government doesn't have a packet the way our government did. Our government like borrowed all this money from, you know, and I mean, money's just numbers on a screen controlled by mostly white men. But so we've got this packet. So a lot of people who are unable to work are still getting paid. Some of them are only getting 80% of their wages, which is obviously going to hit families hard. But some countries, if people don't go to work, they get nothing. So they have to go out and be exposed and the pandemic. So we're very, very, I'm lucky to have a job. I'm lucky to have an income. And the fact of the matter is, if I was suddenly quarantined at home, or let's say I got like someone at my job suddenly tested positive and I had to self-isolate for 14 days, I would be paid full pay. I mean, that's pretty lucky. I mean, I think it's how it should be, but it definitely could be not like that. So I'm grateful that I don't have to worry about that for now. And that's why I really encourage people to stay home and do that, because we want this to be over as quickly as possible, because it can't go on indefinitely. You know, eventually we're going to run out. I mean, I work for the health board, so I could be redeployed once we've finished with all the stuff that we have to do in my department. I think it's probably likely that I'll be redeployed to do contact tracing, which is when you ring people and you actually have to give them the tough news that they have been linked to a positive case. It's quite scary. You do it for STDs and stuff in the world, so public health nurses have had to do it lots and lots, you know, like you've been linked to, or even tuberculosis. So contact tracing, you ring someone, you're like, hello, I'm really sorry to inform you, but you've been linked to a positive case, you need to be tested and you need to isolate. And I think they need people to do that, because New Zealand's infection rate is growing. The last 2 days, I think it's been 80 something a day. Now, most of them are coming from overseas, but I think we still have to. So there's still a lot of contact tracing being done. So I think I might be redeployed to do that and that's like once we finish everything, because we have lots to do still. I still got, like, we're coming in all next week for sure. And then probably we've even still got more to do the week after. And then that's the third week of the lockdown anyway. And supposedly we're only locked down for a month, but I can see it going longer, depending on how everyone behaves and how many more infections there are and all of that. So there's lots to be done. And then eventually maybe I'll be having to do other duties. Like, I don't know how to give injections or anything. I'm not a nurse, but I don't know. They might ask me to do some other type of work in the hospital, especially if lots and lots and lots of people do get sick. So maybe I'll have to gown up and I don't know. So we'll see. But anyway, at the moment, I'm just going into my normal workplace. And so anyway, yeah, sorry. I'll let you all go. And if anyone's even still listening, but just, yeah, stay strong. And kia kaha. That's te reo Māori for stay strong, I think. If you do yoga, there's this really amazing free yoga on Instagram. You can give a koha, which is a gift. On my Instagram, which is NZ Vegan Podcast, there's this beautiful 6:30 a.m. New Zealand time yoga, which is, it's a flow. It's power yoga. So it's not Pilates, or like really, really full on sweaty yoga, but it's really about balancing and stuff. It's Tane Mete. And so you can see it on one of my posts, and, it's actually really good. But if you're not into yoga, I understand, but if you are, I recommend doing that one. And just do your breathing and your meditation and just keep your routine. Keep getting up at the same time. Don't, unless you're really exhausted and you want to sleep all day, but just try not to be unhealthy. Just try to remember to stay healthy. Love yourself. Love your body. Eat well. We're lucky. I mean, I've got a cupboard full of dried beans and lentils and grains, and I've got a pressure cooker, and I've still got gas. You know, I can still cook. So I'm about to go and have beautiful vegan tortillas, oil-free, because it's masa harina, which I can cook beautifully in a beautiful pan that I got a long time ago, really good quality pan. I did invest in some of that stuff when I was working at the bank. And I'm going to have it with beans, and I don't have any fresh lettuce or any fresh greens because I've run out, but tomorrow's market day, so fingers crossed the market's still on. We might just have to line up 2 meters apart and all that kind of stuff and wear gloves and masks, and that's fine. But if not, I'll have to go to the fruit and veggie store and get some more, and they are still open, or I'll go to the supermarket. And but in the meantime, my tacos are just going to be with refried beans, and I've got some salsa, and I've got some tofu sour cream, which I'll whip up because it's oil free. And yum yum yum, so healthy whole foods. I'm gonna eat that, and then I'm gonna do my meditation, maybe do a bit of yin yoga, go to sleep because I've got the day off tomorrow again because it's Sunday, and I'll rest up, and then I'll be back into it on Monday. So I'll be back with my podcast, hopefully with a decent set of headphones, but to be honest, I can't buy any at the moment because even the online stores are shut down. Fair enough too. I don't expect people to go into a warehouse just because I took forever to replace my headphones. So everyone, I love you lots. Please just stay safe and just be love. Just love, 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 love yourself, love others, and just be strong and calm and breathe. And I will be back. Okay, until next time. Bye.